getting sober requires a lot more than mind over matter, a lot more than willpower. It's about leveraging the support around you. People in recovery typically need a mix of medical help, emotional support, and changes in lifestyle to manage their addiction, not just mental determination. As both a therapist and someone embracing the recovery lifestyle, there's one tool I always recommend to people needing extra accountability: SoberLink. SoberLink is a high-tech breath analyzer system designed to help you get and stay sober. And here's why I love it. You'll test the same day every day, eliminating testing anxiety. Friends and family receive instant test results, helping you rebuild trust and preventing relapse. Accountability is a part of that, and it's something to really be embraced. Devices have built-in facial recognition, so your support circle knows you're testing, and tamper-resistant sensors flag any attempts at trying to beat the system, so your sobriety is never questioned. So let 2024 be your best year yet. Visit soberlink.com/TAM to sign up and receive $50 off your device. That's soberlink.com/TAM. And let accountability be your guide.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Addicted Mind podcast. My name is Dwayne Osterlund. I'm your host, and we are on to the next episode. So our guest today is Topaz Adizes, and he is an Emmy Award-winning writer, director, and experienced design architect. He is the author of 12 Questions for Love, A Guide to Intimate Conversations and Deeper Relationships. And in his book, he reveals how every relationship can be deepened through the 12 carefully crafted questions featured in his Emmy award-winning documentary series, The And. Now, in this conversation, Topaz talks about how he got to this project and created this body of work of couples, all types of couples, brothers, sisters, lovers, ex-lovers, friends, come together and go through these questions with each other, and they film it. And in this film, you can see this deep connection that is developed. So in this episode, Topaz is going to talk about how he came up with this documentary series, The And. And I'll put a link in the show notes as well, so you can check it out there. But what is so fascinating about it is watching couples, all kinds of couples, communicate with each other and connect with each other in authentic intimacy. And in this episode, we discuss that process and how that really reflects on all of us and our common humanity. It was a great conversation that I felt was deep and authentic. And it's so relevant to when you're dealing with addiction, because the antithesis of addiction is connection. And how do we do that? Especially when we've had trauma in our life, when we've struggled, and it's hard to do that. This is a way in which you can move through that process and connect with other people in a deep way. And you can watch other people doing it as well and learn from them. It's such a great project. I love talking to Topaz. I hope you enjoy this conversation a lot. I think you're going to get a lot out of it. And if you're getting a lot out of the Addicted Mind podcast, share it with a friend and click the subscribe button. And also, talking about connection and community, join our Facebook group. Just go to Facebook and type in the Addicted Mind podcast and click join. All right, everyone, let's start this episode. All right, everybody, welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. I am so excited for today's guest. I think you're going to love him, because this is about deep human connection and relationship. Topaz Adizes.
Adizes.
Did I get that right?
Close. Adizes.
Close. Oh, yeah. Correct me.
Oh, good. Adizes. Topaz Adizes.
Adizes. Oh, yeah. Oh. You told that to me at the beginning. of the podcast. I thought I had it right and I wrote it down wrong.
No worries. But no worries at
we're
all.
We're getting there. This is about human connection, right?
Exactly. It's a great icebreaker.
A great icebreaker to get us going. But I am so excited about your work and we're going to jump in and talk about it. So let's just go.
Yeah. Where do you want to begin?
I want to begin with you. Tell us about you. Introduce yourself.
Well, my name is Topaz, and for the last 10 years, I'm actually in our 11th year now, we have been creating this project, holding the space of cathartic conversations, deep conversations, beautiful conversations between all kinds of pairs, mothers and daughters, best friends, grandparents with their grandchildren, lovers, ex-lovers, you know, husbands or wives, everything you can imagine. We have over 1,200 conversations recorded. It's up on YouTube, and those are the longer conversations, and then we have all these bits on TikTok and Instagram and social media channels. But in essence, what we've done is the project is called The and The And is about the space between. Because a relationship is not you or I, us or them. It's you and I, us and them. It's the and that connects us. It's the and that's the space between. So that's why we call it that project, The And. And what we do in essence is we bring people together who are in a relationship. They sit across from each other and we give them questions to ask. And we film it with three cameras. A wide shot and two close-ups. So much like we're experiencing this chat now,
right.
You know, this is a bi-panel. We see both our faces and we always show the audience both faces at the same time and equal size and shape. And the reason is because we're elevating the listener. If you think about all the content you watch, films, TV, anything on social media, you're always seeing the person talk. They cut to the person talking and then maybe, but we are not elevating the listener. We're not saying that what this is about the connection between the two people. And that's what we've been doing for the last 10 years. Over 1,200 conversations, everything you can imagine. They ask you questions. They have conversations. We film it and you get the opportunity to watch these vulnerable conversations.
Yeah. So I was so excited to have you on the podcast because one of my beliefs is that human connection is at our core. Connecting with others is at our core, but it is difficult. It's hard. We stumble upon it. Sometimes we don't know how to do it, having these hard conversations. And so when I was watching some of the material on your website of some of these conversations, you can't help but be moved by them. These are powerful conversations. So we're going to get to that part and I want to get there. But first, before we go there, I want to know how this idea manifested itself and how did you stumble into this process of saying, you know what, let's record these conversations.
Yeah, great. So in big picture, I was born with a younger brother, 15 months younger. Greatest gift my parents ever gave me was my younger brother, 15 months. Just he saw so much of what I saw and was like another camera recording life and we could share stories together. Parents got divorced very young, 3-4 years old. I remember them fighting in front of us. That's all I remember really. And that awoke in me a hunger, a desire for like, what is connection? Because I had a void. There was a void. And I was searching for that void throughout my adult years, teen and adult years. And that kind of manifested by grabbing a camera and going and talking to people. I started traveling with a camera and I realized around the world. I was in India, I was in Sweden, I was in Norway, I mean, the States. And I just realized that the camera was my bridge. It was my key to open up doors in other people's lives, which let me in and they would share things with me. And I really loved that. I loved that the camera was that. So I became a documentary filmmaker. I also made some fiction films. And then in 2014, I was looking around and I realized, wow, you know, things are changing so much due to technology. We're seeing how it's shifting politics, how social media is coming out. We're seeing how it's changing money with crypto kind of coming back then. You're, wow, things are shifting. And the question that came up for me was, how is the emotional experience of being human changing? Because the internet has come out in early 2000, Facebook 2002. And then, you know, 2014, I remember thinking about whether I was single at the time living in New York and wondering, should I go and be on OkCupid? I wasn't sure if I should do that old dating site. And my friend said, Topaz, it is so efficient. Instead of having to go to a bar and then meet someone or someone physically, you can find five people, have a quick conversation, go. And then when you meet them, you're that much further along for connection. And I just noticed how, and I also had a brother who was 16 years younger than I, another gift, a second brother, 16 years younger. We were both living in New York, and I realized how different we were both engaging with dating via technology. How I would want to make a phone call, and he was, ooh, aggressive, you know, just sent a text, right? And I, wow, we are. And then I remember having this one conversation. I was dating a young woman, and I happened to be in Idaho working on a script, and she was in New York, and I just sent a text ending with love. You know, thank you, love, see you later, love, something like that. And she wrote back and she said, Topaz, when you say love, do you really mean love? Or are you using love like the English do, you know, kind of like passe, like darling, like whatever, you know? And I said, ooh, wow, okay. So I called her up and we had a 45-minute conversation about a relationship. And when we hung up, she said, when we're about to hang up and we concluded, she said, Topaz, thank you so much for this conversation, because all my previous relationships, whenever we had to talk about something intimate about our connection and how, where we were and how we were feeling, it was done over text. And it blew my mind because I was at that time, I was about 37, 36. She was 5 years younger than I. Only a 5-year difference. And yet the way she was accustomed in the people that she was dating to manage these intimate conversations was fundamentally different than mine, which is, I'm not going to have this over text. I'm going to call you. And I realized, or I sensed that the technology is coming in and we are so good at adapting to change as humans that we forget how it used to be. We forget that we're adapting. We forget and yet we call it the same thing. And if I think of my grandparents, your grandparents, 2 generations ago, even 1 generation ago, when they were young and in love, they would write a letter if it was long term, and they would send the letter. And think about the physicality of that. You are writing ink into paper. You're licking the envelope with your saliva. You're walking to the post office. You're putting in the mailbox, and you wait. And you're waiting.
And it's very intentional.
And it's intentional.
It is very intentional. It's thoughtful.
It's thoughtful. It's, and you're putting these words and you're not, and then you wait and you get a response back 2-3 weeks later. We call that love. And yet we call sending a DM now or a voice note love too. But is it the same? And so as I looked at that, I was thinking the emotional experience of being human is shifting in light of all these technological changes that are happening. How can I create experiences and spaces for us to have conversations around that? How can I create experiences where we can re-feel differently?
Yeah. And so like what you're saying, I totally understand and relate to, because our conversations have become so instantaneous, so fast, so quick, so easy, but there's that element that's missing. And it's this deeper connection that happens when we take the time to be present. Mm. And that's something that in the videos, as I watch the couples start to do, it was amazing to see that. I think it's something we all crave to do, but it's also really scary too.
Mm, for sure. And I think, you know, I'm not here to say that we're going the wrong way, or I'm not asking the question, you know, is social media good or bad? Is love the same or not? What I'm saying is it is changing. There's no question about it. The question is, how are we conscientious of it? What are we proactively doing and can we do to manage this tide that we're in, to manage this stream of flow of the changes that are happening? How can I, you know, how can I adopt technology to bring greater connection, right? I mean, if you think about the love stories that used to happen, they always had based on physical proximity until, you know, before the internet really came out as a social media, you know. You would find your partner through physical proximity. You walked into a party, you're at church, you're at work, you know, in the bus stop. Somehow you had to physically run into them. And now you can just search your intentions and your focuses and find who you are online and find your community. And it's not physically proximate. They could be on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
And you can draw a connection with them and you could find your partner without physical. That's a wonderful superpower. Right?
Yeah.
Or
absolutely.
And so for me, the question is, and that's one thing I've learned from writing the book and from 10 years of doing the AND, is really focusing on the question I'm asking, not the answer. Put all the attention on the question. So the question I'm asking myself is, how can I be more conscientious in the connections around me utilizing technology or not? You know, how can I use it for the betterment? How can I feel more connected to others? How can I bring more intentionality to the moment, to the conversation? And it doesn't have to be deep. It could, you know, a lot of it could be fun and entertaining, right?
So here you are, a filmmaker, a documentarian, documenting your conversations with these people and really getting a lot out of that. Like, you know, as you were looking at the camera and you were going mm-hmm. through your process. And then there came a moment when you said, I think we should put couples in here and ask them these questions. And I want to know, like, where did that spark come from? We're going to record couples specifically answering these questions that are very intimate, challenging at times. Some are simple and some are difficult. And how did that spark come to you and say, yeah, let's record this. Let's put this on camera.
Well, that's a great question. I think in life, there are moments you say, oh, aha moment. But that aha moment, that seed, it's a sprouting of a seed. But that seed was laid long before, and it was given some, you know, nutrients and water. And so one was, I have two very good friends who are great filmmakers, Kel O'Neill and Yongzba. Yongzba and Neil's their name. And they were doing this project around the world, focused on the Dutch East Indies Company, the Dutch West Indies Company. And they filmed a lot with vertical and horizontal. And I thought it was a beautiful way of recording. And then I took that and I offered a gift to my dad. My dad's a corporate culture guru guy about changing culture and businesses. He's now 86. But when he was 75, so 11 years ago, I made a corporate video for him. It was half an hour. And I did it in this triptych using these three frames, inspired by my friends, mm-hmm. Kel O'Neill and Eileen Yongzba. And then I said, wow, this is really cool. What if I use this for something else? There's something missing here. I could use this triptych format. So then come along the question of human experience, how we emotional experience changing in life. Okay. And then connections. And then a friend of mine, because I got these groups together, said, let's talk about what's changing. And one guy, Brian Fountain, brilliant guy, just said, Topaz, because we're living in New York. He said, Topaz, do you think the men in New York, this is 2013, 14, do you think the men in New York know how often their girlfriends or wives get hollered on the streets of New York? Right? Because the experience as a man, as a male walking down the street is different, very different than a female at that
Absolutely,
time.
Absolutely, yeah.
I said, do you think the men know what that experience is like for women? I said, ooh, that's a great question. And then I thought about the triptych. I was like, we can ask that question and then see the reaction on the male or the partner. And so then we started the experiment and we had these conversations. I said, oh my God, this is amazing. We are capturing not reality TV, but reality of feeling. We're capturing their connection. And then I became committed to just, I have to create a library of this. This is an incredibly powerful tool. It's an incredibly powerful format. Creates empathy, deeper listening, understanding, catharsis. And, you know, and I'm not just talking about the participants. I'm talking about the viewers. When they watch this, they go, oh my God, I'm not the only one who feels this way. And
yeah,
right? That gives you hope. That gives you a, because sometimes, especially if you're dealing with a challenge, depression or whatnot, or challenges, you think, oh, you're the only one. Then you see someone else, you go, oh, I'm not the only one. And then you can see how there's multiple solutions, gives you even more hope. And that's the powerful format that we fell into and discovered, not discovered, but fell into, and now carry that responsibility of how do we capture more stories, more relationships, and share that with others. So that other people feel more empowered.
Mm-hmm. There's a real magic to watching it in this format where you're watching the dialogue happen. And even though it's between these two people and you're watching their facial expressions and you're watching their responses to each other, you're almost pulled into that conversation as well. You become part of it. You connect to their reactions. And it really shows that deep human experience of connection when we share ourselves and we, I guess, walk into the discomfort of some of these questions, these intimate questions that you ask these couples, and it's like you're on that journey with them. You're you're going along, and yeah, it makes you feel connected to them. Mm-hmm. And you can relate to their experience too, because you're like, you're in one of those seats at the mm-hmm. same time, even though you're watching them, which is amazing to witness.
We're reflections for each other. When you see yeah. others having a conversation, you're not only watching them, but you're watching yourself, and you question, ooh, am I like that in my relationship? Could I bring more of that into my relationship? Could I get rid of that behavior in my relationship? What I like, I'm not quite sure on this, and I'm exploring it, but the idea that there's humans and there's humanity. And I know I love one of them a lot. And I think I'm right now saying I love humanity. Humans sometimes really bother me, and I have my own, because I'm human too.
Right.
But humanity, I love that. And I get a sense of deeper humanity when I see people really connecting and really being vulnerable and sharing their emotions and not necessarily coming up with solutions, but being themselves, being vulnerable, being honest, and being courageous in their sharing.
You know, working with a lot of couples, and I was talking to you this earlier before we started recording, and I was saying, you know, one of my favorite things to do is couples therapy. I love sitting with couples and walking them through the process of having these hard conversations. Because when they do and they see each other, they really see each other, they really able to validate each other, the connection, the bond becomes mm-hmm. so deep and profound. Mm-hmm. And to be able to witness that it's just amazing. It's exhilarating because you're seeing these couples just connect. And like you were saying earlier, in our world today, we are in an epidemic of loneliness. Mm-hmm. We're all so isolated yep. and we don't know how to connect. And I mm-hmm. think watching these couples struggle through it is so, so powerful.
I mean, I just want to touch on two things. The first one is the last thing you said, which is about we don't know how to do it. We learn by modeling, and we either see it in our families, yeah. maybe some friends, but that's it. And so what I find so powerful about the end is you have an opportunity to watch other pairs have these conversations, and it elucidates for you the possibilities. We also sell the card game so that you can create the space and ask these questions to start practicing that those kind of conversations. And then obviously the book, right? 12 Questions for Love. I think I want to ask you about the couples therapist thing, because I find it really interesting mm-hmm. in terms of the difference between doing the and couples therapy, because couples therapy, I've done it myself, super helpful. But I just want to ask you, so the way I've been saying is, for me, the difference is in the and experience, both pairs, the pair is holding the space. Mm-hmm. They're not, so when you go to couples therapist, you're the referee, if you will, you're the space maker, the space holder, you're asking the questions, and you are helping them facilitate the conversation experience they have. But when they go home, they don't have you anymore. So I wonder, right. are they practice that versus when you do the and? And I'm not saying this is not an either or, and no should it be. There's uses of the and there's uses for couples therapy, and I think they're different. But the thing with the and is what I say, and I'd like to hear your thoughts, is that it's not even about the answer. It's about holding the space for each other in the discomfort, in the exploration. You ask the question. You don't yeah. even have to answer it. Like, the rule is you can pass on any, but you have to ask every question. And they're both in the space. They don't look to a therapist. They're not looking to someone to mediate. They're looking at each other, and they have to mediate through each other with each other. And that creates a different kind of practice, if you will. Versus, what do you think?
I totally agree with you. And I would say, when I use the broad term couples therapy, there's a lot of different ways in which to do couples therapy. Mm-hmm. The way in which I like to do couples therapy is based on, you know, our neurobiology of connection. And so a lot of times there's nothing really there for me to be as a referee, because that's not going to solve a relationship problem. What I would say is, maybe what's a little bit different than the and would be putting them together, where they are looking at each other and they are doing this process with each other, and I'm simply nudging it along mm-hmm. so that they do it, but they have to get to that space. Maybe in therapy, there's not the same way of saying, hey, I'm going to pass on that question. But I guess you could, if one of them wanted to, that would be their choice. Right. But it is about relationships. It's about the neurobiology of connection and how our mirror neurons in our brain fire with each other when we're looking at each other and we're exploring that. So it's facilitating that space for them to do that.
Yeah.
I can't really be a referee. It's not my job to, the way I look at couples therapy is to be the referee. It's not necessarily really going to get you to the space of connection, though. You know, I want to put a little caveat in there because couples therapy is a little bit different. It does have an agenda and it is going in a certain direction.
Right.
But still, at the end of the day, it's about that deep human connection. That's what everybody wants to get to.
Yeah.
It's to that piece.
Yeah. I think that's a big differentiator, is because in the end, there's an intention of creating the space for possible catharsis or possible growth or exploration. But you're not pushed into it. And maybe sometimes you do need to be pushed into it. Sometimes we need to go and face it. And maybe that's where the therapist is, you know, trained in practice in knowing how to guide you there in a safe way and guide you out in a safe way. Right.
I think that's a great way to put it. I think that's a great way to put it. I totally agree with that. It's a guide in that process, because there is an agenda. They're coming because they want to know how to connect. And a lot of times all of their own histories, like you were saying earlier, get in the way of being able to do that. When we have trauma and we get stuck, we have defenses against being vulnerable, because maybe in our childhood it was very, very unsafe to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And yet we want connection. So we have to learn how to do that. And we can guide that in a safe process that allows people to do it in concert with their nervous system and maybe not avoid re-traumatizing themselves around these relationships. So that's a little bit more thoughtful, but there's a purpose to that too.
Yeah.
So I would say that. But I want to go back to you, because you started recording all these conversations. What was it like as you started to see these conversations over and over again, and you started to see, because I think this is where the book started to get developed, but I want to know your process of how you started to like put all this together, and you're watching these conversations over and over. I guess I'm asking, like, what similarities are in there? What did you start to see? What were the patterns you noticed? And what was that like?
When it started as an experiment. What happened? Look at what happens. Okay, interesting. All right, let's try again. And, you know, in the beginning, I say we had some, I call them low shocker questions, like low shocker levels. You know, am I the best sex you ever had? That was an early, but that's not a good question, because that's a yes or no answer. It's also not very interesting versus asking a question, you know, what is unique and beautiful about our sex, you know, our intimate engagement?
Oh, I like that. I see the difference between those two.
You know, and asking questions that are not binary. And so basically it started by really instinct. I mean, I gave a bad example of low shocker, but obviously there's other questions like, what are you hesitant to ask me? That's a very simple question that worked from the beginning. And I'm just informed by doing this and watching conversations for the last 10 years, now in our 11th year of so many conversations, and really starting to put questions in what sequence. What if I put this question here and that put question there? You know, and there's an architecture to the questioning. So usually when we do an and production, for the most part, each person comes in, they face you, they know each other, and each of them has 12 questions. So there's 24 questions each. And there's an architecture to that. There's a, just like in a 5-act story or a 3-act story, in this case it's 5-act. There's a beginning, you know, it builds, there's a climax, then it lands in a resolution. So the questions are shaped for that. And that basically came from trial and error, from seeing, ooh, that question really worked. You notice how people really dropped in there? They took a moment, there's a pause. Do we realize that, ooh, that really worked after this question? Because we built. So that's kind of how we've come to see what works. And then really not until the book did I really have to think about what's the methodology here. What's this? Why is this working? I mean, I always thought about it, but I had to put it down to pen to paper.
Yeah. I was wondering as you were talking about starting to see these universals among all of these relationships. And once you were, like you were saying earlier, like, oh my gosh, I relate to that. I see that. But I would imagine as this starts to happen, you start to see though we're all unique, we're all humans, right? Humanity has these similarities about it.
This is what I saw like 4 years in. I said, oh my God, the heart is made to love. The heart is built to love.
I love that.
And it's trying to find its, and I, you know, cause think about it. You're in a room. There's three cameras. It's a warehouse. Two people are talking for an hour and a half in Dutch because we filmed in Amsterdam. You're like, what's going on? Like, this is weird. If you just dropped in, you know, but because we filmed around, I think, 10 countries at this point. The heart is built to love. And I'm watching that and I realize these two people, the heart is that emotion of love and connection. It's finding its way. It's finding through its maze of emotional scar tissue and fear and doubt, whatever previous experiences, to come out. And then it's trying to find its way through the cultural rules of society and programming to then reach another yearning heart to connect. That's all I saw. That's the pattern I kept seeing, is the heart is made to love. And that's all it's trying to do. But we don't quite know how to do it because we're not practicing it. It's not like we're not reinforced to do that. And that's why I think that's why I feel really grateful that I'm participating in this project, because I feel like we get an opportunity to show different ways of connection, and it inspires others to practice the same.
You know, when you say that, and I connect to that statement, the heart is meant to love, it's so often that we lose that gets lost in our day-to-day life, mm-hmm. and our day-to-day life as we have to pursue whatever we're doing, or our goals we have to accomplish, or the places we got to go, or et cetera, et cetera. But we lose that moment, that reality right there.
Isn't that a beautiful reality? That beautiful moment is divine.
Yeah.
We have that, right?
Yeah.
I feel like absolutely. You're remembering something. I feel like you just went back to a memory. Did you just go back to memory?
Well, you know, I'm thinking about, I have this saying that says, you know, doing this healing work, being in the helping profession, I have this saying, which I've seen over and over again, we heal through the eyes of others. And I want to add your element to it, which is the heart is meant, you know, how did you say it? The heart is meant to love.
Is made to love. Is made to love.
The heart is made to love. And we heal through the eyes of others. And if we can trust that, you know, we can get to the other side and we can transcend our suffering.
I couldn't agree more. And to add to that, I say that the heart, the mind is built to protect, and the heart is built to connect. And so let's not let the mind get in the way. And what I mean by that is, let's make sure that the mind is serving the heart. And what I mean by that is, when you ask yourself in a relationship a question, shape the question in a way that will be more empowering and opening of the heart, and your mind, and then let the mind answer it. So for instance, if you go, why do we fight so much? Your mind will then race and give you the answer. So many lists. But that's not necessarily a service to the heart. Instead, you could say, what's our biggest challenge right now, and what is it teaching us? And that mind will then answer that question, and that is service to the heart, and that is service to connection.
Yeah, and we walked to the other side of that, and as we've been saying, that's really, I think, where the majority of us want to be. Maybe there's a small subset of people that can't do that, or don't know how to do that, or won't do that, but like you said, the majority of humanity, I believe wants to get there, but you know, we stumble on all these other things that come around. And the other part I'm thinking about as we're talking about this is that this process creates some structure we need to be able to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. That's why the Ankar games is a very simple way, commercial simple way to play a game to get there. You go to therapy, you get guided. It's more intense. This could be a very simple way. Hey, let's play a game. Ooh, you know, what is their bigger, you know, why do you love me? Oh, all of a sudden the space has been created for one person to tell the other one why they love them and for the other one to receive. It's very simple.
Yeah.
It's on the surface, but it can help get you there. And then you drop into a moment and go, wow, you know, you've been my brother for so long. And yet I never knew that about myself. Thank you for answering that question, reflecting me back to me. It helped me on my path to growth and healing and right. Or that illuminated my connection with you. It's a very simple way to illuminate a connection and give us a greater sense of what it means to be alive as humans.
Yeah. And it's not that hard, but as we were saying earlier, sometimes we kind of lose our way. So in your book, the 12 questions for love, right? You've taken all of this material and you've gone through watching all these couples go through this process and you refined it down to 12 main questions. I love them. I'm going to use some of them as I work with couples because I think like, wow, these are really just, they're simple, but they're powerful. I mean, how did you get it down to like 12 questions? That's what I want to know.
So these are the meat and potato questions that really work. But in the end of the book, I offer multiple other options for the different kind of sections, just for the architecture, different options. But those are the ones that I've seen over the last 10 years of like trial and error. These ones really work well. And then I tell, you know, I share why I think they really work well. But what's more important than the actual questions, because you can have a prescriptive experience and it'll be amazing. But even more so, you can understand why it works. So then you can create your own questions and create your own space and apply that in your own life or relationships. But it came from trial and error and just trying it out and being moved every time I saw a pattern. Wow, that's a really good question. You know, why do you love me? You put that at the very end and you build them an architecture of this journey. And when they answer that at the end, they really drop in. Or the one right before that, number 11 is, you know, if this were to be our last conversation, what's one thing you'd never want me to forget? You know, that
so
opens, it opens people up. And, you know, or the seventh, or, you know, what are you hesitant to ask me and why? Or another version of that is, what are you hesitant to tell me? What do you think I'm hesitant to tell you? Like there's many spin-offs of the question that we can do, you know?
Yeah. But it's powerful and I can imagine why you're sitting with these couples as they're, like you said, dropping into that state of connection, dropping in into that state of vulnerability. There's a change in the body.
Mm-hmm.
When we get there and we know it and we can recognize it. And I think that's what's also powerful about watching these videos because we go along with on the ride with them. And in some ways we drop in ourselves into that state. And I believe it's like a biological state. It's part of our neurobiology. It's part of being human, but we know it when we get there. And it's a state we want to experience in our life. Most of us want to experience.
Yeah, I believe so. And I think there's also people who do not want to experience it because it rattles their soul or it's too, you know, because they're traumatized or too painful. And for me, it's just a missed opportunity of a nutrient. Right? Yeah. It's a missed opportunity of there is this incredible thing that can give you energy and vitality and give you a greater sense of what it means to be alive. That I know you're maybe hesitant or you're not comfortable for, but if we can step into that, we don't have to get intense, but if we can just step into that space and share that moment, that can give you a lot of revitalizing energy. It can make your relationship that much more resilient and fulfilling. Right? And I think one beautiful rule about the end is just that you don't have to answer every question. So if you're listening and you want to play, but your partner doesn't, all you can do is ask them to have the experience with you and then sit in the experience with them and let them be them. They don't have to answer everything. They just have to be there with you. That can be enough.
Yeah. And so that gives them a little extra sense of safety mm-hmm. where they can have an out. Because as you said, when we make ourselves vulnerable to another human being by giving of ourselves, by exposing ourselves, especially our fears, our desires, like the word says, we're vulnerable to be left, rejected, pushed aside, whatever our trauma might be, shamed for having it, whatever it is. And so, yeah, we definitely need to be able to step out if we get to that point where it's really uncomfortable, and having that space to be able to say, okay, well, I'm overwhelmed.
Absolutely. And I think discomfort is good. We shouldn't confuse it with safety. If you feel safe, yeah. it's very good to be uncomfortable in safety, because that means yes. you're about to grow. Right? You know, the flip yeah. side of the discomfort is growth. Is you know, if you have to have that challenging conversation with your partner or someone at work or someone, and you really don't want to do it, but you know you're in a safe space, you know that this you know you can trust this person, that, and you go through that difficult conversation. When you get to the other side, for the most part, you feel closer to them, because you're like, we handle that. Just think of a makeup sex, you know, makeup, you know, after a fight and you make up, you feel stronger in the relationship. You're like, we can weather that storm. And now we're going to march forward with this much more empowerment, or this much more stride and this much more courage, because we know we can handle that because we went through it.
Yeah.
More confidence.
Yeah. I mean, the price of intimacy is vulnerability. You don't get in the door if you don't pay the ticket, and the ticket is vulnerability, to make yourself vulnerable to others. But you have to be aware of safety, and that these are safe people too. So there's some discernment there, and being able to make sure you're in a safe space. One more question I have. What about doing this with couples that really had a hard reaction to it, or a difficult reaction to it, or couldn't do it? What did you see there? What stopped people, said, all right, I'm done. I'm walking out, or I'm not going to film, or maybe no one's ever walked out. I don't know. I'm just assuming.
No one's ever walked out. Yeah. There's only been one pair that has wanted to walk out, and I asked them to just not stop in the middle. So I said, we don't have to ask any more questions, but please let's go to the last two questions, because there's an architecture to it, and you don't want to leave in the midst of, you know, a crisis or conflict. You need to heal it up. So you need to go to the end to just make sure we acknowledge what we've just been through. We acknowledge each other, the presence of each other. And so that's been, so out of 1200, that's been the only time that has come up. And then,
wow.
But they were kind enough to trust us, well, okay, let us post the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's been the only time. I think it's because we tell the participants, this is your space. All you have to do is ask the questions. You don't have to answer anything you don't want. Also, we don't, as an audience, we don't have to understand what's going on. So, what was the last time I hurt you? Ooh, that time. Oh, yeah, that time. That time really sucked. Okay. Well, as long as you both know what's going on, you don't have to explain it for us. So, that gives them a space of their own secret, their own space, even though it's being filmed. And so, most of the questions are, some of the questions that go deeper have a bungee cord effect. So, what I mean by that is, when was the last time you think I wanted to leave, and why didn't I? You know, when was the last time you think I wanted to leave, and why didn't I? So you can say, well, that last time that you probably really wanted to leave, and then you didn't because, and then why didn't I? Because it gives you the opportunity to, you could say something really deep and maybe somewhat hurtful and really honest, but then the bungee cord is, and why didn't I, is that it puts you in my shoes, and then you can kind of pull it back. You probably didn't because of this or that. Or another version would be, what's something that I don't understand about you, and why do you think that is? When was the last time I really disappointed you, and why do you think that is? So then you could tell me, well, you really disappointed me when ba 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 ba. But then I have to answer why. Then you have to answer why you think, you know, I did it. And then, well, probably because of your own trauma, or because you didn't understand. So there's a bungee cord effect. So you can go in, but then you can also pull it back.
Yeah, and pull back that connection too. Mm-hmm. Wow, Topaz, this is a great conversation. We're coming up on our time. Mm-hmm. So I always like to ask one question at at the end of my podcast. And it's maybe there's someone out there listening and they're hearing this conversation and you could tell them one thing. What would you want them to know?
Stop looking for answers. Create better questions.
I love it. That is so awesome. That is so great. So if people want to get more information from you or find you, where can they go? Where can they get more information?
TheSkinDeep.com and TheSkinDeep on all the social media channels. That's our team. That's what we do. And you can find everything there, TheSkinDeep.com or TheSkinDeep on the social media channels.
Awesome. Thank you, Topaz, for coming on. And I also want to thank all the couples who are willing to be so vulnerable and to allow people into their lives. I think they give such a gift to all of us out there to be able to witness this, because I think it's like you said earlier, it's healing for humanity.
If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have a project. So I honor their courage every time we do it. And thank you for acknowledging that.
Yeah, absolutely. Topaz, thank you so much for coming on. It was a pleasure having this conversation with you.
Same. Thank you, Duane. Thank you so much for this. Thank you.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Addicted Mind podcast. As usual, all the show notes will be at theaddictedmind.com. So check them out. And I definitely encourage you to check out the project, The End. Really awesome. So before we go, I just want to thank everybody for leaving reviews on the Addicted Mind podcast. I really appreciate it. I just want to share one with you and why these are so meaningful to me. Here it is. Hopeful Outlook. My 24-year-old daughter has been addicted to cocaine for years. Everything she and we have tried to navigate towards health hasn't worked. We are both listening to these podcasts and starting to chart a new course. She feels hopeful for the first time in a long time. Thank you so much for your work. Wow, I can't say how much that touches me and just means so much to me to see that they have some hope to move forward just by listening to these conversations. So thank you for leaving that review. If you're listening, just thank you. That made my day. All right, everyone. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and I will talk to you on the next episode.
Oh, hey, it's Erin.
And I'm Michaela, and we're the hosts of the Two Sober Girls podcast, and we are on a mission to spill the wild truth about sobriety.
Forget the rosé all day cliche. Sobriety is flipping amazing.
Absolutely. It's not just about quitting the drink. It's a gift you give yourself and your loved ones.
So what are you waiting for? Break up with that old toxic relationship with alcohol and let us show you the possibilities.
And here's the thing. Everything your precious heart desires becomes way easier without the influence of alcohol.
We're not just two sober girls. We're also wellness coaches. We're here to show you how to optimize health, lifestyle, and beauty, feel sexy and alive as F.
So stay tuned because we're rolling out new episodes every Monday wherever you get your podcasts. And trust us, they have your name written all over them. We can't wait to share the magic of sobriety and wellness with you. Subscribe to Two Sober Girls podcast today and come follow us on Instagram for behind the scenes action and send us a DM. We can't wait to meet you.